Welcome to the Leap of Lumia podcast with Benjamin, the Dream Wizard, and the conclusion.
And jumping to conclusions, that might be that a quick to make decisions type of thing, that intuitive type of thing, and that it doesn't always serve me well. You know, that sometimes I'm like a little too quick. Like, okay, well, I didn't wait and think that through hardly enough. Yeah, I've definitely done that in my life. And broadly conservative, moderate lifestyle choices. And that's a funny thing. It's like, just politics in general. There's been a pretty strong campaign by, I would say, the more liberal. So if we look at progressive and conservative as the broad strokes, progressives more into art and media and culture. And of course, they want to validate their approach to problem solving and to moving forward into better things. And part of how they've done that is to kind of say, well, conservative is negative. Conservative is evil in some cases. And so there's been throughout a lot of our lives, if we've been exposed to pop culture, we look at, you know, the conservatives as the people that are the enemy or the roadblock to be overcome towards something better. And I lately I've come to a different understanding of it is, you know, it's as much as I'm libertarian and very, very liberal in a lot of senses, I'm very, very often traditional and conservative in a lot of things in terms of, what do I try to say? There's best practice. And I think it's related to human nature, and that because it's human nature, we can say this works better than that. And yeah, we figured it out a long time ago. And I think of conservatism or tradition as having respect for like Aesop's fables. We've known this stuff for a long time. It's not going to change. It doesn't change. It's pretty consistent. Yeah. It's who we are. So I think we need a little bit more of a proud conservatism to pop up and be like, yeah, we like old things and traditions and following rules and being mellow and moderate, and it's okay. This is not a bad thing. This is not the enemy. I think we need both in proper balance. I look at conservative is the stone of a fireplace, and progressive is the fire. And so in order for fire to not burn the house down, you need it bounded by something that is inflammable. Fire cannot get hot enough, it can melt stone, but really just a fireplace. That's why we use stone to contain the fire and to make it useful for cooking, to put the proper utility to it. So that's kind of how I look at it. Like you can't have a cold hearth that is nothing but stone. Then it is not a fireplace. Then you cannot cook. Yeah. Then you have no heat for your house. But you also can't have fire in the middle of your house with no stone. Your house burns down. So that's what I'm looking at our current cultural zeitgeist moment right now, is this trying to find the proper tension again between how much rigid stone do we need to bound this useful fire, this energy of desire for progress and improvement in a way that, you know, doesn't lead to complete chaos of the house burning down or a cold hearth that has no life in it. Yeah, all of that from that one sentence. So I think that's very, very true. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think the next one is true.
Tries to put self in other shoes. I really do. I try not to be unaware of people's circumstances, and I try to have this goes back to me being not being right, but knowing what is right, having accurate, proper judgment of situations, of people. And that means that you don't want to be, you know, you can be gullible and overly forgiving and a doormat and you get walked all over, and you can be a rigid, judgmental asshole that just, you don't give anyone a shred of mercy. And I mean, that's either one is dysfunctional. So I try and say, okay, let me imagine if this was me. Now that's gotten me into some trouble too, where I'm like, I try to put myself in someone else's shoes. I don't understand them well enough to come to the right conclusion about what they're actually thinking or feeling. And that all falls apart there too. But I try and take it into consideration. How's this person doing? How's my behavior affecting them? What's the best, most reasonable explanation that might motivate a specific kind of behavior? And that goes into the whole, you know, being a psychology, but then also with the dream thing of like, I really gotta, if someone's inviting me into their head to look around, I'm not even in my own shoes at that point. I'm walking around barefoot in your gray matter, you know, speaking of shoes, but if I don't adopt that perspective, I can't give anyone anything useful. If I can't see the world through your eyes, then I've got nothing to tell you it's of any value. So that one for sure. Yeah, and I tend to get along well with the but go ahead.
I said we brought this one up, the introvert and extroverts. We had the whole session on that one already. I didn't even know that was on there.
No, for sure. Yeah, yeah. And I do. I kind of I'm very tolerant of like, okay, this person's like this. I can roll with that. That person's different. That's fine with me too. And again, then socially, emotionally, and politically moderate. Yeah. The other analogy I use sometimes is the human body. It's like we have muscle and bone. And if we had no bone, we'd have no shape. We would just be a pure mass of muscles twitching. You have to have bones for the muscles to pull against to move you around. You also need muscles for the bones. Otherwise, you're just locked in place. Muscles move you. Bones give you shape. So that's that blending of the conservative and the progressive broadly is we need both. And I look at our you know, progress and tradition is the big yin yang. I mean, we absolutely need both, and probably a little more tradition these days would balance the scale back to where it needs to be. Susceptible to heart-rending sales pitches, you know, with the appeals of the heart. And then a copybook writing style. I have a very, as much as I ramble and rant and whatnot, I have a very precise way of speaking. I try to say exactly what I mean because it's confusing enough even saying exactly what I mean. There's still the chance I'm not saying it well enough. So what is that? What is that reference in handwriting analysis lexicon, a copybook writing style?
So copybook writing style. So we're not talking about your writing style is like copybook perfect when you're writing by hand. We're talking about you exactly what you said. You like things to be stated precisely. Right. Like the formatting you were talking, the formatting has to be perfect. The book, the words have to be perfect. The paragraphs have to be perfect. So it's copybook writing style. It's not somebody just putting something together, putting it out there, going, hey, Amazon, which some people have made $1 million doing, which really kind of kills me. But it's not that. You are very precise on that and make sure that everything is copybook precise, right?
Yeah, definitely. If I'm going to put out a product and ask someone to buy it, I'm going to make it as damn good. Like there's a period or exclamation point out of place. I forgot a quotation mark. I am pulling it down, editing it again, and re-uploading it. You're going to get the best thing I can possibly, which is actually, you know, I'm recording right now. ABC book 17, The Fabric of Dreams. I'm at just started chapter 5 out of 13, and I can do maybe like 15 minutes of audio a day before my voice starts to give out and it's too hot in here and I got to go do other things. So it's going to take a while to get through that, but that is my final editorial pass of the book. I am reading it out loud into an audio book as I look through the lines. And I've already edited this book like 3 times. I've read the whole thing 3 times because I had to, you know, format it and do all these different things. Now I'm finally down to, I think this is the final copy. Nope, I found more mistakes I can fix. So I'm very much
and reading very much involved through, in that. You would definitely, because you're going to find doing an audible, you definitely would find the final mistakes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. That's interesting. That's very cool.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that precision, and you know, especially I don't like to be embarrassed. I don't like to throw something out there and people go, "Wow, this is awful."
And somebody's saying, "Wow, this person is not professional." Because I mean, I'm horrible because when I read a book and I see one typo in it, and the whole book is perfect, but there's one typo, I go,
"Oh, it stands out."
It's horrible because I know that my books have typos in them.
Yeah. And then that's the proper thing too, of like, you're going to make mistakes.
100% perfect, you know?
Yeah. I really want to be though. I mean, like if I can get something 100% perfect, that's
I
nice.
know.
That feels so
There you
nice.
go. Copybook. Perfect.
Yeah, that strong desire to really make it as good as I possibly can. Well, I
Yeah.
look at that like we are always going to fall short of perfection, so you have to try as hard as you can to get as close as you can. Otherwise, you're going to fall way short. And sometimes
Yeah.
it's not that critical, and you just, you know, if you're what is it? If the point is to have fun, then it doesn't matter how clean it is. You can go ahead and let it be messy because the fun can be messy. So you got to have the right attitude for the right circumstances as well, and know what you're really there to accomplish, and not get lost in. We don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, as they say, you know.
That's true.
But yeah,
Now, I wanted to bring up something just
sure.
quickly because we are on the Bleep Bulimia podcast.
Oh yeah.
And I know this is very different because we talked about handwriting and stuff, but I did want to put an end thing. I actually have this book that states that through handwriting, you can note whether somebody has an eating disorder.
Oh.
I will state honestly that I'm not 100% in agreement with it. I have the reference to it, but there are certain parts of it that are really interesting that yes, I noticed my handwriting had that in it while I was bulimic and I
Oh.
don't have it in there anymore.
Did you notice that in mine at all?
You know, I didn't see bulimia in yours.
Well, not believe me, just any kind of eating disorder. I mean, I'm fat and lazy, so
No, you didn't
it's
see any eating
possibly
disorder. There
yeah, I
was
eat too
just a
much.
there was just interesting element though. No, like I mean the physical thing, the thing that you would look at is on your D's, and I couldn't see any D's that had it. Is
Okay.
that's where you ask if you have any if you feel self-esteem issues towards your body is in the D.
Gotcha.
So if the
That
D
didn't
has a
pop up.
loop that just shows it, you're not showing it.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I've kind of come to a
You're
place of peace with it in terms of like that's why I say it just flat. I'm fat,
no,
whatever. What are you
no,
gonna
there's nothing there.
do?
And your intellect on a T, if you have fear of being made fun of about your intellectual, I get this sometimes, I see it in my writing, is a loop in your T before you cross it. And I generally pretty good, but I notice when my intellect starts to feel like it's dropping, it pops up. I'm not joking. I hate sometimes looking at my own handwriting because I go, oh
Oh
no, you're having a problem with this. You're having a problem with that. Fix it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the awareness of it is amazing because I am aware. I become aware of the things that are bothering me through my
That is
handwriting.
good. Yeah. I think
Yeah.
if you can have more of that openness to self-critique sometimes without being overly self-critical. I mean, that's again, it's all
Yeah.
that proper balance type of thing. You can't be so critical of yourself that you've or have such low self-worth that you just can't function. I mean, it's a horrible
Yeah.
existence. Why would anyone want to do that? You also can't be so overconfident that you never question, have I made a mistake? Is or that you
Right?
never think it's possible. That's either way, way out of whack. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to tell a really silly story because I deliver
Yeah.
cars. I love doing it. I don't deliver it to people's homes. I do the paperwork and I'm lovely because everybody's happy. But I have to put I have to put their driver's license plates on, right? The license plates on. And on the cars that we have, they have these little plastic things that go between the license plate and then the screw. So that it doesn't go, the license plate doesn't go right against the car. And those are hell to put on.
Oh, yeah.
So then I started, did enough of them. I'm going, wow, I'm getting really good at this. Yeah. Never tell yourself that. Because the next one
this
I
is
tried
going
to
very
put
well.
on,
Famous last
it
words, yeah.
wasn't going so well. And I went, when you start becoming that, what is it called? What's the word? Like, ooh, I'm so good at this.
Kind
Like,
of cocky,
yeah, that's
cool,
when God's
yeah.
going to come and say, I'm sorry, I'm going to just give you a lesson. The next one that you're going to do is going to be just as difficult as the first one you did.
Yeah.
Don't become so, yeah, just maintain your humbleness. Just be grateful. Go, wow, this one went well. This one went well, right? But it's like, I'm so good at this now. Yeah,
I think
that's when
that's
you're going to
the
end
bottom
up.
line of that biblical admonition. Your pride goeth before a fall. It's like, yeah, right before you make a huge mistake, you're overconfident, and that's usually the cause of it. So this, yeah, and being proud of an accomplishment I put effort in that I could have chosen to work not as hard, but I did. I worked as hard as I needed to, and now I have something good. That's very different than being prideful or being overly,
Sure.
proud and prideful, different ends of the
And
spectrum,
my
right?
story is just a little stupid thing, but I'm just saying is that I was just chuckling to myself because even when I said, "Oh, you're getting really good at this," my little head inside me said, "I think you just like just don't say that." Just and the other thing too is when you're working, sometimes it becomes so easy, but then it becomes not so easy because you're going to forget things because it becomes a routine and you sometimes
Yeah,
forget to
you go
check
on
things.
autopilot.
And you do. And I'm sitting there going, I don't want to get to the point where I feel so confident that I think that I'm not going to make a mistake. I always have to realize I got to recheck things over because the more you do it, the more you have to recheck it over. Because like you said, autopilot is going to probably give you more of a problem because you're going to think, it did it. And one thing you're going to miss, and you're not going to go back and look at it because you're so accustomed to it, which I
Well,
thought was really cool. I found that out today.
I have an awareness of that too, in the walking out the front door and going on autopilot. It's locked, you close it, you walk to the car. I get sitting in the car and go, I have no memory of closing the door. Did I just walk away and leave it open? Now, 99% chance I didn't. Did I forget to lock it? I get out of the car, I go back to the front door, I jiggle the handle, it's locked. But I
It's
just
locked.
so you know my that's one of those like obsessive, almost obsessive compulsive type things. Not into that range, just leaning in that direction. True obsessive
And
compulsive
it
would
is, but
be you got to jiggle it 16
going
times
back three
precisely.
times, yeah.
Three times. But we all have these tendencies as well, and that's the idea of
Because the routine.
awareness from routine.
Yeah. I mean, if it's new, you're always checking and you're doing it, and you know you've done it because it's your first time doing it. But when you've done it so many times, you're exactly right. I'll come down. Sometimes I'll be up going out the door, and then I'll come back down, make sure that the back is locked because I'm going, I know I did it, but it's so routine. Am I remembering yesterday? Right? Like, am I remembering yesterday? I mean, I even lost a set of keys. I went from my car to the house, and I usually come down in my basement apartment, but I went through to the main floor where mom is, and we have not found the keys since. I have to use my spare keys, and I'm thinking, and I went back through, and I didn't go anywhere. I walked into the house, I unlocked the door, I went in the house, put them down somewhere, nowhere to be found. Mom looked for them, I looked for them. I went in my car to see if I dropped them in there, but I locked the car, so that wasn't a possibility. I needed my keys to lock the car. And if somebody has stolen the keys, they would have already stolen my car. So,
It's a kind of interesting thing about the brain is like as much as it is a information gathering center, it also seems to serve a necessary function of information discrimination. We have so many sensory inputs that we have to ignore most of them to pay attention
yeah.
to a select few that have the most productive results. I mean, imagine if we couldn't differentiate or discriminate is not the right word, but separate out listening or looking at one thing in specific versus the entire background picture. If we didn't have that function, if we didn't ha couldn't narrow it, narrow things down like that, we couldn't do anything. We couldn't function at all. So that's one of the most important functions of the brain is turning off a lot of the sensory inputs so we can actually get anything done. That's kind of an amazing reframing that I heard recently. I'm like, yeah, that's it. We gotta
You
shut
made
out
me
a lot of the
lose my
stimulus.
keys.
Yeah, then we then it happens when we don't want it to. Like, no, this was the wrong moment for autopilot. Well, we got to the end of the list. That's amazing. I didn't know how long it was going to take us to talk about it, longer than I thought, which is fine, but
It's okay. We've
I'm
been
impressed.
good. I think only about 2.5 hours. I love it.
Nothing wrong with that. You know me, I'll do
And
those
nothing wrong with
four-hour
that. This was
marathons.
absolutely fantastic. And so, in the end, it sounds like the handwriting analysis does proved to be pretty close to what it says it does. So I thank you very much for, you know, going through this with me. And I will probably break this into a couple of segments, because I know that my listeners are used to just having, you know, about 30 minutes, but I don't know.
Part one and part two.
Happens. Anyway, yeah, seriously appreciate this. Love having these conversations with you. And
very fascinating, yeah.
They really are. Thanks again. I'm going to go and get a bite to eat because I'm hungry.
Yeah, I got to take the dog out to go potty and get on with the day here. So,
oh, got to do just that too. I have doggies to potty too.
Exactly. Well, I guess, again, just one last time for everybody. I'll say, if you're interested in what I do, I got the YouTube channel. I do the dream interpretation interviews. It's just Benjamin the Dream Wizard on YouTube, and then BenjaminTheDreamWizard.com for the full list of the books. Got 16 of them available, and working on book 17, and then some original works after that. So that's my shilling.
And let me tell you, I was one of his guests and best thing ever. And I had a dream that kept coming back, and it hasn't since he went through it with me, and everything makes sense. So that was episode 93, people. Listen to it.
That's right. Episode 93, The Brave and the Fair.
Thanks again, Benjamin. We'll be in touch.
Good talking to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Be sure to visit me at bleepbulimia.com.